Hi, and welcome to the Rare Business Podcast. My name is Adrian Swinsko, and I'm a consultant, advisor, researcher, and writer on all things related to customer service and customer experience. Through this podcast, I seek out and interview CEOs, entrepreneurs, business and tech leaders, and leading thinkers about what it takes to build organizations that produce better outcomes for both customers and employees in this fast-moving modern age that we live in. If this is your first time listening to one of these interviews, then welcome. And please do dive into the archives at adrianswinsko.com, as I've now completed over 250 of these interviews in the last few years. If this is not your first time listening, then thank you for returning, and I'll aim to do a good enough job to keep you coming back week after week. Anyway, that's enough from me right now. Let's get into the interview. So welcome to the next edition of the Rare Business Podcast. With me today, I have Robert Johnson, who is the CEO and co-founder of Team Support. Hey, Robert, how are you doing?
Good. Well, good morning for me, Adrian. Good afternoon for you. I'm doing spectacular. How's today treating you?
Very well. Well, the sun's come out, so it's that's good. It was a bit cloudy earlier on, but it's kind of like it's brightened up. So then, you know, that's fine. But anyway, enough about the weather. Because everybody would be like going, oh my God, it's more Brits or another Brit. Please save me. But anyway, let's turn the kind of the focus onto you, Robert. So for the benefit of our listeners and readers, can you tell us a little bit about yourself and the work that you do?
Certainly. Well, as you said, I am CEO of Team Support. We are a B2B focused customer support technology platform. Mm-hmm. And I founded the company in 2008 after being the CEO of another software company from kind of the 95 timeframe to 2006. And once I sold that company, I decided I want to get back into the business of being a serial entrepreneur and started Team Support. And here we are 11 years later now.
Perfect. Now, I know that you and Team Support, you and the folks at Team Support, that you specialize in providing software for the B2B space. I mean, and that is your absolute focus, B2B, nothing more, nothing less sort of thing. And I thought that's interesting because not many other sort of software platforms are exclusively one or the other, as it were. So why have you chosen to specialize in the B2B space? And do you see differences between the B2C and B2B spaces that your specialization therefore benefits from that, if that makes sense?
Yeah, the reason that we focused on B2B is frankly, that's what our background is. That's what we know. Right. As I said, I ran a software company that was very B2B and very much in a very defined vertical. And so I really, part of it is I don't understand the B2C market from the customer support standpoint. I've always been a B2B guy. It's always a market I've been involved in. But I did see and continue to see a huge hole in the marketplace. As you mentioned, a lot of providers are doing basic B2B customer support. There was no one in 2008, and I'd argue really no one else today that focuses exclusively on the B2B marketplace. Mm. And I do think it's a fundamentally different marketplace. Mm. If you think about the interactions that you normally have in the B2C world, they are high volume, low complexity, and low material value.
Right.
So what I mean by that is, let's take a generic B2C provider, and you're going to be answering the same question over and over and over again. And it gets, again, high volume. You get a lot of the same questions, but it's a very, very low complexity, a very simple question to answer in most cases. Where is my package? How much do I owe? How do I do this? Things like that. Mm. But each individual transaction in that world is probably not going to be a very high dollar and not going to be material for the company providing that support. For example, generally, if a B2C customer says they don't want to do business with a brand, it's not going to impact the brand at all. Now, if a lot of customers do, obviously it does, but an individual consumer does not.
Yes.
The B2B market is the other way entirely. It is relatively low volume support inquiries, but they're generally complex. In a B2B world, if I'm in a company, before I'm calling a vendor to ask a question, I'm generally asking internally. And I'm going to use the internal resources I have to answer that question before I go immediately to my vendor to ask that question. So by the time it gets to the vendor, generally it's more complex. Again, generally it's lower volume inquiries, but also it's going to be to the company more of a material question, more material customer. Right. Each customer basically is worth more because there's fewer of them in the B2B world. So you could be talking to somebody and providing support for somebody that has $1 million software system. Mm. If you upset that customer and they decide no longer to do business with you, that's a material event. So the B2B okay. world is much different than the B2C world. Very, very important for B2B brands and B2B customers. And again, something that I felt that no one else was focusing on. That's why I founded Team Support back in 2008. And continue to grow the company into one of the leaders in this space.
Fantastic. So, but then here's my thing. It's like people are also talking about that the B2B space is being affected by the sort of the consumerization of technology, i.e., you know, the iPhone and its kind of usability, and you know, people just want things to plug and play, and so on and so forth, and that. Therefore, consumer experience with B2C technology is affecting their expectations of how B2B technology and possibly support is kind of performing. I mean, is that true kind of now? Do you see kind of the B2C expectations and experience seeping into the B2B world?
Totally. And we've seen that for years. This is not particularly a new item. 100% agree. The consumerization of broadly enterprise technology has been going on for a long time.
Yeah.
You could argue it even goes back to the early Windows days or the early Apple days, early yeah. Macintosh days. I'm old enough to remember having green screen terminals. So the consumerization of technology, bringing computers and then great interfaces into the home, without a doubt has interfaced enterprise technology for the last probably 20, if not more years. Mm-hmm. On the support space, 100% agree. Everybody wants instant gratification. They want excellent consumer experiences, and they want to be able to talk to their brands in whatever channel that they are comfortable with.
Does that mean that,
without a doubt,
does that also kind of mean that you were also mentioning that the nature of inquiries tend to be more complex because people will consult internally more before they can go to the vendor. Are you seeing a shift in that sort of dynamic, and that people are more readily going back to the vendor for less complex queries as well as the complex ones?
You know, it's a great question. I don't have any data to back that up. So the short answer is I don't know. I think that you're still going to have individuals and companies using their internal resources.
Okay.
There's a lot more, frankly, due to technologies not involving us, there's a lot more collaboration technology in an office today than there was even a handful of years ago. Think about Slack and Microsoft Teams and everything else. So there's a lot of collaboration internally, and I still think that people are going to reach out internally before they go to their vendor for complex B2B issues. But without a doubt, there's consumerization. All the experiences that consumers get, and when they have great consumer experiences, they want to translate that over to the enterprise. Conversely, they actually get scared in some cases talking to a B2B vendor because they've had bad experiences in the consumer world. So it kind of goes both ways. There's some great consumer experiences in the B2C world, and there's some frankly horrific ones. And that influences consumer expectations and behaviors on the B2B side, both positively and unfortunately negatively as well.
Perfect. Now, the other thing I wanted to ask you about is that you've been quoted as saying, I think something like, rather than focusing on closing tickets, agents should analyze the entire customer relationship, providing care customers feel is personalized and worthwhile. With the advancement of technology, support teams have the ability to evaluate customer data and emotions, allowing them to focus on keeping customers happy rather than simply closing tickets. Now, that's a bit of a mouthful, and kind of like you have to take a deep breath to say it all in one go.
That's a wrong quote. I don't know when I said that, but I'll take your word for it.
I mean, taking all that into account, I mean, what did you mean by that? I mean, I guess the point really is that it's not about closing tickets. It's about relationship.
I'll make it really simple. It's about the relationship. That's exactly right. Good customer support should not be transactional. It should not simply be about closing the ticket and moving on to the next issue.
Right.
Especially in the B2B world, again, when we have high material value customers, the importance is understanding and improving that relationship with a customer. In the subscription economy, as we well know, it's absolutely critical to control churn and frankly increase upsell as well. And that is really one of the prime reasons that the relationship is important. And that's actually one of the key reasons we went back and we built Team Support back in 08.
Yeah.
It is a lot of companies are out there doing basic ticket break fix, essentially customer support. And frankly, it's not that hard to do. The hard part is providing the tool set to allow the understanding of that relationship and potentially improving that relationship as well. Just answering the tickets isn't enough. Understanding and improving that relationship is more. So I'll distill that quote down to one very simple thing. Relationships are important.
Perfect. So the thing that also the other thing that interests me that I found out when I was doing a bit of research before this is that you use and I think this is right, I'm right saying is that you've developed and now use a thing called the Customer Distress Index to help with that whole relationship management sort of thing.
That's exactly right.
That's right. So how does that work? And is it the same sort of thing as a customer health score?
On a very high level, the concepts are similar. We're looking at how satisfied or dissatisfied a customer is. Mm. However, on the support world, by the nature of our transactions, we're only going to be able to understand the distress. As I joke fairly often, nobody calls customer support and says, "Hey guys, we love you. Things are going awesome. Just want to let you know that. Thanks. Have a good day. Bye." That phone call has never happened in the history of customer support going back to whenever it started.
Oh, that's going to be a dare for our listeners, isn't it? Just kind of call somebody up and say, "Hey, how's your day going? I just want to call and say hi."
We love to have a phone call. Now, my support manager would love to have a phone call. But the reality is generally support centers and support departments get phone calls when there's a problem, and they only get phone calls when there's a problem. So Team Support is designed as a customer support solution. We strive to understand the relationship, but the reality is we only see the distress. We don't see the good stuff. Mm-hmm. So our CDI, Customer Distress Index, measures a number of different metrics. Obviously, the simple things like ticket volume, ticket complexity, things like that, just ticket severity. But we've also done some really innovative things. We've integrated with IBM's Watson to use their sentiment analysis tools. So we can actually understand if a customer is happy or sad or frustrated or angry. And we dial that into the CDI as well. So we can look at an individual ticket and understand the level of frustration on that ticket, but then we can roll it up to the company level. Again, we're not looking at, we do look at individuals, but we consolidate all the individuals into a company because we're B2B. And we're looking at that relationship with that company as a whole, obviously comprised up of a number of relationships with individuals, but we roll that up and we can score the company's distress level. And that's actually, as a CEO of my company, I have that report every Monday morning. In fact, I just got it a few minutes ago.
Right.
I got a report with our CDI scores and the trends on them for our customers. So it allows me to understand if we have customers that are potentially in problems that I may need to deploy additional resources to, or as a CEO, I may need to pick up the phone and say, "Hey, what's going on? How can we help you?" And being able to get ahead of those issues before the customer gets very frustrated at you and just churns, having that ability to understand that level of frustration and again, go back and improve that relationship is absolutely key to managing B2B relationships. It's not about the tickets, it's about that relationship.
So how does it actually work in reality? I mean, is it a bit of a, you have a model and it's set and it's a bit of a black box and the stuff goes in and then the recommendations kind of pop out, or the CDI kind of metrics kind of pop out? Or is this a thing that can get customized depending on people's situation, the context, nature of the work that they do, and so on and so forth, and what they know about what's important for their customers and what's important for them?
Totally, totally customizable. The worst thing we can do as a software vendor is walk into a company and say, "This is the way it should work. This is the only way it does work." And we've all seen vendors that do that, and it's a kiss of death. So in our case, the CDI is totally customizable. Every company knows the metrics that are important to them,
right,
and they can model those metrics and tell us which ones are the most important and weigh those. And they can even play with it. You can set it one way, run a test just with a click of a button, and go back and change it to another set of metrics. So very, very easy to customize. Doesn't require a degree in machine learning or anything else.
Okay.
And we've had a lot of customers that we'll come up with their metrics, we'll plug them in, their weights, and hit go, and they get a report back showing what the CDIs are. They then go back and measure that and look at what they think, their gut feel of their customers under the most distress, and they report to us a very, very high degree of correlation between their gut feel on customers and what we're reporting back to them as their customers under the most distress.
So what sort of, how many sort of dimensions are we talking about in terms of their customizable within the sort of the back end of the model, as it were?
Very broadly, 10 plus, I believe.
Okay.
But those metrics can be very complex metrics, such as the Watson score, the sentiment analysis. So we're taking 10 potentially pretty complex metrics, and we are combining them into, with the customer's weights, into one CDI score.
Yes.
One of the really innovative things about the CDI, though, is we aren't just spitting out a score on a given customer. The way the CDI is computed, it's actually looking at the average of all your customers. Actually, the standard deviation, it's pulling the standard deviation out for one customer as compared to all of your other customers. So okay. We're not simply saying that if you have 10 tickets, that's bad. What we're saying is if this customer has 10 tickets and the average is 3 tickets, we're more than one standard deviation above that. So that becomes an issue on the CDI. So that's a really important concept to understand, is we're comparing your customer to all of your other customers to develop a CDI number based on averages and the standard deviation away from the average.
Right. Okay. So yeah, that makes sense. So to bring this to sort of to life, I mean, Robert, do you have a couple of examples of say, couple of companies that you work with that are using CDI and how they've benefited from it? Because it sounds quite sophisticated, but actually bringing it to life with a couple of stories might actually help me and also people that are listening in kind of really understand and get what you've been able to do here.
Sure. So we've had a number of customers that will, in fact, all of our customers use a CDI, but a number of them reported back to us that they are able to really understand their customers, and they'll be able to pull insights and pull levels of frustration out and distress, as we call it, they didn't know about it all before. Mm-hmm. And that has saved them revenue, that has increased their customer satisfaction, and that really has become a big issue for them. So especially for some of our large customers, we've got a couple customers with multi-thousand seat deployments out there, mm-hmm. It becomes very difficult for executives or support managers to really understand all of the different interactions they're having with their customers without having to go through and look at all the tickets and manage that directly. Mm-hmm. So in a case where you've got potentially 20 or 30 support reps talking to, you know, 50 people at a client company, understanding that relationship is very, very difficult. So we have a number of customers who will, on the managerial or even the executive level, will use the CDI to unearth cases where they have, frankly, problems with their customer relationships.
Right.
And they will use that directly to deploy executive resources or technical resources to go in and understand and save that client. Mm. And just in numerous cases where we've seen that happen and reported back to us, it has been immensely beneficial to them.
And do you think that some of your clients will use some of the setting of the the expectations, the model, the, almost like a, there's a set of sliders, I guess, in the back, and you sort of, you're picking your right sort of level. Do you think it might be also a useful thing to do collaboratively with your customers as well? Because that feels like a...
Very much so. And that's actually one of the things that when we sell a system, we have a great onboarding team that goes in and works with our customers to understand their business model and to guide and advise them on how best to deploy team support.
Right.
And that department is just amazing in their understanding both of the team support platform, but also of the industry overall. And they do just an amazing job of understanding our customers' needs and wants and workflows. And then we map team support to what they want to do. And a part of that is understanding the CDI and understanding, frankly, what metrics are important to them. Mm-hmm. And then working with them to set the CDI up correctly.
Okay. So... That's great. I mean, it's interesting because it feels like it's very customizable, but very also next level of detail in terms of trying to give them almost like a macro and a very macro view of kind of how the business is doing. But it's about the account rather than just about the ticket, and therefore it's about the relationship.
Exactly right. And that's, again, the B2B issue is you have a ticket and you're dealing with one or two people in a company with one or two support agents on the vendor side. but you may have 100 tickets with 30 different customer support agents and 50 different people at the company. Mm. But the relationship in a B2B world is not with one individual. No. It's with the company as a whole. So understanding that relationship with that company through all the different tools we have, including the CDI, becomes absolutely critical in that B2B world.
Okay. So, Robert, I just want to kind of like switch gears a little bit. And sure. I want to ask you a couple of questions about where do we go from here? I mean, can I be interested in getting your view on what do you think the future of B2B customer service, customer experience looks like? And what are some of the biggest challenges that you see kind of coming up?
One of the most exciting things we see in the marketplace right now is broadly what's called customer success. So mm-hmm. we talk about customer support and we talk about our CDI primarily as reactive customers. As we joked about earlier, customers only call customer support when there's an issue. So we're missing a big part of that relationship, which is the broad customer success movement. In a very, very high level, it used to be called account management, where people from the vendor are reaching out and saying, hey, how you doing? What can we do to help you?
Yeah.
I think it is the future of the relationship movement of customer support. So yes, we have to answer questions. Yes, we have to deal with break fix. Yes, that is always there. The idea of customer support, as we know it, is always there. But more and more important is that relationship. And that's an area that we're actively pursuing and an area that I think is the future of broadly customer support and even more broadly, the relationship that a vendor has with their clients.
Okay. And for me, there's one of the things that's been a big issue over the last kind of couple of years is that, you know, particularly if we've seen it in the B2C sort of space, is there's been this mad rush to digitize pretty much everything, and particularly service and experience. And many companies have got it right, many haven't. And actually the feedback from customers, consumers, have been that actually they like the new digital tools, but they also bemoan the lack of the human touch. And there's almost like experience is becoming increasingly humanless. And therefore, companies are having to almost like readjust, recalibrate in terms of trying to figure out what's the right balance between human and tech. I mean, do you see that as being a future challenge for the B2B industry as well?
I think it's a current challenge.
Right.
I'll kind of go back and beat on the same horse I've been beating on for a while, but going back to the idea of relationships. Mm-hmm. In the B2B world, we're dealing with, again, potentially much more material value relationships with our customers. So the need to bring down the cost of each interaction, while certainly it's important and we can't ever ignore the costs, it's not the same driver as it is in the high volume, low complexity B2C world. So yes, we're seeing a huge drive in the B2C world to things like automated chatbots, deflection, and ways to lower the cost of the per interaction cost. Not as important in the B2B world. Certainly it is important, but it's not nearly the driver that we have in the B2C world. So I do think we're seeing a move in a way of differentiating vendors, of having that personal touch and better service. Mm. Certainly, we have a lot of tools that allow some automated interactions. And in fact, where customers want to see that, we have a lot of that. For example, is what we call ticket deflection. We can do that via email or chat. Or through our customer hub, where if somebody's asking a question, we can automatically give them relevant knowledge base articles. Mm. And that's an interesting blend of, no, it's not a human touch, even though the humans may have curated the articles, but it is something that customers love to see because, frankly, get their questions answered without having to talk to somebody, and it's really a win-win.
Okay.
So kind of a long-winded answer, but I do think it's an issue. I think it's going to be a huge issue in the B2C world, especially as brands really try to differentiate themselves. We've gone through the idea of outsourcing call centers, and that's generated a lot of frustration. I think we're entering the era of really AI-ing the interactions, and that's going to start frustrating a lot of people. And I don't think we're quite going to be there in the B2C world for just because of that value of that relationship.
Okay. So try and bring it all together. So if I was, given your experience, Robert, and somebody's thinking about, they're listening to into this chat that we're having, and or they're reading the highlights, and they're thinking, yeah, you know, I'm B2B, or maybe they're B2C, and that they, you know, they, but they want to improve the service or experience they deliver to customers. I mean, what would be your best advice? I mean, where should they start? What's the first thing that you think that people aren't doing that they should be doing more of?
Well, they should buy team support, clearly.
Well, yeah, apart from that, obviously.
I'm going to sound like a very broken record for anybody who still remembers what records are. Maybe a CD is skipping for some of our younger generation.
Long live the vinyl. That's all I'm saying. Exactly.
But understand that relationship. Understand that it's not simply transactional. Understand that you really have to look at the customer holistically, and answering their questions, doing the standard break fix customer support is critically needed. It will likely always be needed. But if you're just doing that and not trying to understand what the customer needs and wants and what that relationship should look like, you're really missing a huge area. And ultimately you'll have dissatisfied customers if all you're doing is doing break fix customer support. So going back to again, the thing we started with, it's all about the relationships. And I think any company who wants to improve their customer support and their interaction with their customers has to focus on the relationship and understand what their customers want out of that relationship.
Sure. Perfect. So we're now going to riff a little bit in the kind of a la sort of the vinyl space, because before I finish up, I've been doing a piece of ongoing sort of social research, let's say, because I just published a new book, which I told you about, called Punk CX. And it's all about this idea that the customer service, customer experience space is exhibiting some of the same characteristics as prog rock did in the 1970s, i.e. it's becoming incredibly complicated, complex, in danger of being self-indulgent, and in danger of disappearing up its own arse, if you pardon my language. And I think kind of the experience space is exhibiting some of the same characteristics. It's like, you know, dominated by technology, codified, certified, benchmarkified. I'm just making words up now. And in danger of disappearing, it will be becoming more interested in itself than actually the end customers. The thing I think that's interesting about that for me is that when I was thinking about it is that, well, punk rock was the thing that exploded out of the back of prog rock. It was almost like a direct reaction to it, and it was a DIY back to basics approach, and it's all about heart and emotion and trying to make a difference and daring to be different, as it were. And that made me think about I wonder what a punk version of CX would look like. And so then so I wrote this book about it, which is kind of, it's a bit like a comic or a fanzine. And but what I'm doing of course of on the back of the book is asking people for their take on what one or two words do they think would describe a punk approach to CX?
I've got to say, that's a fascinating analogy. We talked the other day, and until you mentioned that, the idea, I really hadn't thought about it from that perspective, but I think it's brilliant.
Thank you.
Punk to me is doing something different and not being constrained with the just the way things have been done before. And I think there's a huge amount of analogy to that with customer support, customer experience. Try new things, break them, work with your customers. I think in the punk world, and I would say even in indie rock today,
yeah,
it's much more about getting closer to your audience. It's not about just putting mass label records out there and working on being on the top 40 charts, but it's actually trying to be closer to your audience, know who your audience is, and dare I say it again, having that relationship with your audience. So I think there's actually a huge amount of synergy or of the ideas of punk rock or indie rock today, and where a lot of companies are taking support and experience.
Perfect. And then the final question, Robert, is can you think of any companies or brands that you think would epitomize that sort of punk CX ethos or that punk ethos?
Yikes. You know, I would say the one brand that really comes to mind that has done a great job with that is a consumer brand, but Virgin. I think across all the different brands, they've done a great job of not adhering to the status quo, of doing things differently. And it's really worked. It's interesting. In the U.S., we've had an airline for a while, Virgin America. Mm-hmm. And they did, very much like Virgin Atlantic did, a very, very different take on the consumer experience on the airline. And as a consumer, I loved it. We had a flight that we had flights out of here at Dallas, went to LaGuardia and went to California. And whenever I could, I took Virgin America just because they did things differently. They treated customers very, very well. And it was a radically different approach to customer service in a space that's known for, frankly, horrific customer service. Unfortunately for me, and probably good for Virgin, they got sold to another airline here recently and kind of changed their model a little bit. But I would say Virgin across all the brands, you know, Branson has done an amazing job with that. And that's the brand that really epitomizes that idea to me.
That's perfect. So, Robert, that's fantastic. Thank you for that. And thank you for your time today and tell us more about team support and the CDI and all of that. So if people want to find out more, is it simple as teamsupport.com?
Teamsupport.com. Yes, sir. It's a pretty easy one.
Fantastic. So once again, Robert, thank you for your time today and sharing kind of your experience with us, and tell us a little bit about Team Support and the CDI, and just giving your view on the differences between B2C and B2B, and you know why we need to, you know, to appreciate those differences and act differently in different spaces. But yeah, once again, thank you. That's been great.
Thank you, Adrian. It's been a really fun conversation. Thank you.
Well, that's it for another interview. I really hope you enjoyed it. Now, every time I complete one of these interviews, I learn something new. And I try and incorporate that new learning into my writing, my speaking, my workshops, and the consulting that I do for my clients. If you're interested, you can find out more about how I work with clients over at adrianswinsko.com. But one final thing before I go, please consider heading over to iTunes or whichever podcast platform you choose to use, and do leave a review. Every little helps, as they say. Anyway, that's all for now. Thank you for listening, and do listen in again. All the very best.